Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Tuesday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Russ, alongside, as always, here until 3, CGL Takeover. He has a shortened show again today to 325. Los Gigantes continue the monumentally successful road trip. Can't even get it out because it's very difficult these days to be a Giants fan and to keep a straight face when you talk about potential, and we're only in April still. But maybe they're going to turn it around now. Maybe that win in Pittsburgh and the off day and the travel to Toronto, maybe they needed to get out of the country is what I'm trying to say. Okay, so this could be the key to the whole thing. The Giants need to play the rest of the 162 either in Canada or potentially in Mexico, or maybe they ought to fly overseas and see if London has a baseball team they could play. I'm just saying the road trip continues. A 4:05 first pitch today in Toronto, so Christopher has a shortened show again. Tomorrow the Giants have that odd afternoon game. I say odd because if somebody were to tell you they have a 1:07 start, that would be odd enough anyway. You would think it means they're back home, but as it turns out, it's a getaway day proposition with the two-game series that we see a lot of in interleague play. 4:07 in Toronto, so 1:07 our time tomorrow, which means it will preempt our show tomorrow, and CG will finally get a little bit more of a show. It has been a battle because the Giants have been east, but they will be coming back home on Friday, and they'll get back to normal. But the Giants today at 3:25. Tomorrow, there'll be a first pitch of 1:07, and we'll be back with you on Thursday. As far as stuff going on for us, Stanford is in softball-wise to play Fresno State tonight. That game is over on 790. And, of course, for us, when the Giants wrap up, we'll get over to the Sharks as they play the deciding Game 7 against the Golden Knights tonight up at SAP. And hopefully the Sharks, who had so much promise going into the playoffs, will be able to completely erase that 3-1 deficit and win the series. And that will give them huge momentum going forward. We'll see how that plays out. They'll be on after the Giants. Also, Fresno State baseball tonight, not on our air, but on the Mountain West Network. And we'll talk to Stephen Tremblay in just a moment about that, and then we'll get to Andrew a little bit later in the hour today. So, that having been said, let's bring up our good friend, the director of digital new media at Fresno State, our primary contact for Bulldog basketball. It is Stephen Tremblay, and a weekly visitor at that on Tuesdays. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a big week for us with a couple of championships and baseball and softball in town late in the Mountain West race. So it's been fun, and Mountain West staff is already here and starting to set things up for men's tennis later this week.
I was just mentioning I couldn't get the Giants and successful in the same sentence without starting to laugh. At least success has been, as of recently, right there at the doorstep of both the baseball and softball programs after they were stumbling a bit. So let's start, first of all, Stephen, with what you're going to do tonight. Paul is going to go ahead, right, and do the telecast only for Mountain West, and you're going to slide on over and do radio for us with softball. Is that right?
So I'll do radio and the Mountain West Network feed.
Pick that up at
softball.
Yeah.
And then
right.
Matt Norville will actually be at Pete Biden Field at Bob Bennett Stadium for the baseball call. Sliding over our usual softball announcer will be sliding over to do some baseball, which he'll be doing next week as well. For another one of our midweek games.
And then Paul will have the games over the weekend on our air against New Mexico. But you were mentioning to me, Stephen, because of other commitments on the east side of Cedar, we will not have telecast. Is that right, to go with the simulcast?
That's correct,
normally?
Both on the baseball and softball side. And it's something that we really try to avoid. But when there's four major events, two being those conference championships, the other two being baseball, softball, late in their seasons. In a perfect world, yes, we would be able to broadcast it where you've got an ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, maybe slide something to ESPN News. But on our case, our max is at any one given point are two broadcasts, and we'll be at men's tennis with that being a conference championship, and then women's water polo with that also being a Gold Coast Conference Championship, the first that will be hosted at the Aquatic Center on campus. So it's really an exciting time for our teams. And, as we've talked about over the last couple of years, we do our best to make sure that there aren't lapses on the digital side of coverage. But we are excited that the baseball games will be on radio, and then one of the softball games, at least tentatively, is right now slated on Saturday to be on 790 as well, when we're not able to do a digital stream from those sites.
Well, it's great to have Stanford in. You know, it's a funny thing, and we've discussed this before. At one point back in the early 2000s, you had Jessica Mendoza playing center field for Stanford, and Ramona Shelburne was the right fielder at the same time. And, gee, whatever happened to those two, right? I'll have to do this to ESPN to find out where they're at. But, yeah, look, I've mentioned this on air from all those years that I called those games. Stephen, I wish that softball, and baseball as well, but that softball could find itself in a California-based conference where Stanford and Cal were there. I realize it's Pac-12 affiliation, but just for softball, if you get those schools, get Long Beach and Fullerton, the old conference mates together, I think you'd have a lot better conference and certainly one that was more proximic. I know it's not going to happen, though, is it? We are pretty much in the mode where for the bat and ball sports, you're going to stay in your conference, right? There's no talk of breaking those away, correct?
There is not. But, I mean, when we're talking about strength of conferences, I mean, the Mountain West on the softball side, and this isn't just me saying this, this is just the numbers, is as good as it's ever been. I mean, you've got five teams that are in the top 57, with Fresno State being that 57th, but you've got a real chance for three teams from the Mountain West to get into the NCAA softball tournament. Fresno State may or may not be one of those teams, depending on how they're able to finish, but it is a big opportunity playing a team like Stanford that has been able to rebuild that program from where it was at such an elite level a couple of off years, and now they're right back in the mix of where they're likely to be an NCAA tournament team at a 26 RPI. And for Fresno State, it's one of those opportunities where you go on the road and play at Utah State, not a lot of opportunities to build your RPI. You actually drop a spot even after sweeping that weekend. But for this week, playing New Mexico at the latter part of the week, if Fresno State can handle business and take care of their own business, it's really a chance to get into maybe those mid to low 50s heading into those final few weeks. And with Boise sitting in the top 40, and they're going to be coming to Fresno in a couple weeks, that's another opportunity for some of those RPI builders where kind of a stone's throw away from being in that at-large conversation right now. But, I mean, on the baseball side, they're right in the mix of an at-large and being in that first-place spot.
Yeah, it's all fair comment. I was mainly referring, Stephen, to the travel.
Yep.
That used to be so much easier, which it just isn't. Also, the weather, naturally, when you're playing in a California-based conference, which was the case for so many years for both the bat and ball sports, the weather was not as problematic as it always is going to be in the Mountain States, that's for sure. We saw it, again, demonstrated with what happened with Air Force and having to play all the games here. But I know it is what it is, and certainly, and look, I'm well aware of it because I had those pilgrimages to Omaha, to Sunnyvale, and Oklahoma City all those years. It has been a stark contrast from the year after the national championship in 98. They went back in 99, the softball team did. Since then, Stephen, they haven't been able to get to a super regional, which they didn't have at that time. Are you surprised that there's been a 20-year drought now? Because it's something I never would have dreamt, that they wouldn't at least get to a super regional. Any particular reason that has stopped this team, in your opinion?
I mean, you see the emergence of the SEC and Big Ten, and this isn't making excuses. It's just a fact, and the amount of money that they've been able to funnel into it, where, I mean, they weren't major players on that national stage. I mean, you've got, I mean, California kids that are leaving the state to go play at some of those elite institutions where, I mean, in the past, you had more folks stay home. But you are, I mean, you're keeping some of the best in the Valley right now with under Coach Garza, and you saw it under Coach Ford and obviously under Coach Wright of where this program's been. I think there were a few times that Fresno State was hosting super regionals even as a two seed, where I mean they're within a run or two. I remember those 1-0 games, those 2-1 games that, I mean, one pitch where Jamie Southern is throwing 150, 175, maybe even pushing 200 pitches over the course of the game. And I mean, just some elite softball. And it just, it was a different kind of game when you, where it wasn't as offensive driven, but you definitely had offense at that time. But nowadays, I mean, you're regularly seeing home runs, or it's, your pitcher's duels are more in that 4-3 range or 5-4 in some really close games, because teams are just able to find ways to score.
Yeah, Steve, it's a great point. And I'll tell you what, along those lines, first year in Oklahoma City in 1990, and it was when Fresno State every year was playing UCLA for a national championship and just falling short. You get to a title game with that old Dudley White softball you're talking about. You're just settling in on that Sunday, because they used to have it go all the way to Sunday and then Monday if necessary over Memorial Day weekend at that time. Of course, they've changed the schedule in the weeks now. But bottom of the first inning, and Ivan Gutierrez hits a three-run homer for UCLA in the bottom of the first, and here you had Lisa Fernandez on the mound, on the circle, who hadn't given up an earned run all year long, and you're down 3-0. It was a little depressing, right? You sort of knew.
Trying to dig out of those holes was huge back then. I mean, you're trying to scrap together, a hit there, and, an extra base there, and all those kinds of things. So, all those opportunities. I mean, talk about streaks that I was a little bit surprised to hear. I was surprised to hear Arizona hasn't been to Oklahoma City since 2010. Now, they're playing some of the best softball in the country right now. Not at number one, but they won, like, 20 straight games. They've been in super regionals, but, you talk about the history of Fresno State and Arizona, obviously it's right there with the two teams playing in that national championship, and plenty of times throughout the years. Nearly 6,000 people watched a game at Margie Wright Diamond with those two teams. You've had those chances. So it's great when Cal's able to come down to Fresno State, when Stanford is coming down this year for these midweek games. And, I even like seeing some of the – I remember back to the 6 and 8 o'clock doubleheaders on Friday nights, so where you're playing a conference series over the course of two games. You might have a midweek that had a 6 and 8. You're not seeing it as much with some of the – with more tournaments being added to the mix and not having quite as many games get rained out for where things are at the minimum and where teams want to be and how you're going to build that RPI where – Stanford, it's a chance for them to get some road RPI wins. Mike Bates was talked about it, how an RPI road win is worth 1.2 wins. And you go and put that over the course of a three-game series, you can get as many as 3.6 wins, as opposed to at home, you're only going to get that 2.4. So there's some benefits. As much as you want to play at home, on the RPI side, mixing in as many road games does help you as you try to position for the NCAA tournament.
Well, there's no question. It's a big week for both bat and ball sports. And as I let you go, Stephen, I'll tell you this. Your analysis is right on the money about what has happened. It was at one point almost a California school invitational back in Oklahoma or in Sunnyvale. You'd have 5 of the 8 that belong to the state. That has changed because, like you said, the monies that have been poured in, and that meant better facilities, better to recruit. But the thing that Margie brought up to me, and I think it was very cogent, this was after she had retired, she said, you know what has caused it? So many of the assistant coaches from California, the former players from schools in California who became assistant coaches, then took jobs across the country. They became the primary recruiters for the Michigans and for the Florida schools, and they knew where the talent was, particularly in SoCal. And that's changed the dynamic. And, the old round robin between Fresno State, Arizona, and UCLA to see who would win the national title, that is long since removed. Hopefully, Fresno State's going to get back on that stage.
It's not that far off that it could happen again, and it could happen sooner than later. Maybe not this year, but it could happen at different points. But those are three programs that have that tradition, that have that ability, especially when you start putting things together right, that they could all meet back up in Oklahoma City.
Well, look forward to Stanford in tonight for softball, Pacific in, cross street at Biden-Bennett for baseball, then New Mexico in over the weekend. Stephen, anything else we need to look for digital media-wise this week?
So our Mountain West Men's Tennis Championship, which is a tennis championship that most schools are only able to host once every 8 years. That's on campus this weekend. Starts Thursday. Dogs competing at 6 o'clock. Matches throughout the quarterfinals days on Thursday. All of those games being on the Mountain West Network for Mountain West Men's Tennis on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Check gobulldogs.com/MWN for all the specifics related to there. And then women's water polo, they've designed their tournament a little bit differently, where there is a consolation portion of their bracket. So there'll be four contests a day starting Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Again, that's at the Fresno State Aquatic Center. I'd love to have you out there. But if you can't join us, that will be on the Mountain West Network. And basically that'll be exclusively to gobulldogs.com/MWN. It won't have the expanded distribution on the Mountain West site, and with it being a Gold Coast Conference events, and probably a few less spots on campus insiders, so you may not see it on your Roku devices and other things. But definitely go to gobulldogs.com, and you can watch both of those championships. As men's tennis and women's tennis is also is down at San Diego this weekend, not on-site here at Fresno State. But those contests will also be on the Mountain West Network. Free to watch.
Good enough.
At gobulldogs.com.
Good enough. Stephen, have a great broadcast tonight. We'll certainly tune in, and I will talk to you next week, my friend. Take care.
Thanks, Tony. Have a great rest of your week.
Sure. All right, guys. Stephen Tremblay, Director of New Media at Fresno State. He'll have the play-by-play, the simulcast tonight, 790 Mountain West Network. And again, Mountain West Network only with Matt tonight for baseball. Paul will be back Mike's side, as we say, over the weekend with New Mexico in. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with Andrew Martin after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. Just about 2:24, Bulldog Hour to 3. CG will be up until 3:25, and then the Giants will take over, first of two from Toronto. First pitch at 4:07, if you want to be precise, and it'll be 1:07 tomorrow, so it'll preempt us tomorrow. We'll be back with Jackson on Thursday, and also Marcus will be with us. We'll talk Bulldog football in regard to the draft coming up. I think people heard about Clark deal tonight, which is a major deal for Seattle and KC. But our main interest is what happens with Ellison, what happens with Bell, and maybe Gruden does something creative with this draft that affects Derek, hopefully in a positive way. So far, so good, given Derek the wide receivers he wants. But as I've said many times, including yesterday, I just don't trust Gruden long-term to continue on with Derek. I hope I'm wrong about that. I don't think the change would come this year, but I do know there's going to be an evaluation period. And look, many, many times we've talked about the good news of Gruden having the 10-year guaranteed contract. He can make those types of decisions without having to reboot the whole thing, which causes so many teams to step back. The Phoenix Suns. Poor Booker. That's the fifth coach in 5 years he's going to have now after the firing. You want stability. You also don't want somebody who's not accountable. And at times I wonder if Gruden has so much in regard to leverage with Mark Davis that anybody else in that front office is just a yes man or he's going to be gone. How that impacts Derek, we'll find out. All right, guys, chance to talk to our good friend Andrew Martin right now. Look, it's 25 after. I don't know if we have time for the long intro, but sports director at 24 and 47, host of Bulldog Insider on Sundays, conduit to the Olympics, to the Super Bowl, to the U.S. Open, to you name it, any U.S. Open you want, golf, tennis, he's right there. It's Andrew Martin. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing well, Tony. I was fortunate to go to the last two U.S. Opens that were in California in 2010 at Pebble, 2012 at Olympic Club in San Francisco, and I did put in a credential request for the Open this year at Pebble. Scott Bemis and I were both accepted, so not exactly sure what our coverage plan is going to be yet, but Bryson DeChambeau will certainly be there. I think Nick Watney's got some work to do to make it into the field. We're still going to have some conversations as to how best we can cover it, but looking forward to it. And I put in my request before the Masters, so now that Tiger is certainly going to be there and trying to catch Jack again, it should be really, really interesting. But what a beautiful course. I love the U.S. Open.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. When you're at Pebble, do me a favor. Knock on Huey Lewis's door, Jim Nantz, and, of course, Clint Eastwood, all three of them. And I'm sure they'll all welcome you in, Andrew. Josh, you know what? You have a better shot than I. Let's put it that way, all right? They won't open the door if I show up, provided I can hop over the gate or whatever it is I needed to do. All right, let's talk about a couple of things up front that relate to Fresno State, but not guys on campus at the moment. I talked to Paul about it yesterday. I'll ask you, since you are an inveterate Yankee fan. And by the way, I got switched from Oakland to New York, New York and Los Angeles in Anaheim last night. Even though Aaron wasn't playing, so that was a nice 14-inning affair. But you worried about Aaron Judge at all? I mean, this is that oblique strain, which is an abdominal side of the abdomen kind of strain. You concerned about this, or is this just a blip on the radar? Because Boone and company making it sound like it's going to be more than just a 10-day trip on the IL, as we're calling it now, the injured list.
Yeah, that's another topic for another conversation, the DL versus the IL. I watched that game last night, and it was funny because it went 14 innings, Tony, as soon as I got off.
I didn't find it funny. Wait a second. You found it funny. I did not find it funny, but I understand what you're saying. Okay.
Well, yes. I mean, it's ironic how in a world with so much, you know, political correctness, that this is the one thing that they would poke fun at when it's been called the disabled list for who knows for how long. And the reason why is because you are disabled from being able to play, you know, for your current team. I mean, they're not trying to poke fun at anybody who, you know, unfortunately may be in that realm of challenges. They're just, it's a name that they've called it, but they feel like they have to make the name change. And I think they're drawing more attention to it by changing it from the disabled list to the injured list than by leaving it alone. But I watched the game last night, and I can't pick out of a, you know, as a diehard Yankees fan myself, I mean, it's almost like a, you know, like a little league team that they're fielding there, because I don't know who half these guys are. You know, a lot of them are prospects, and they're getting their opportunity to show what they can do at the next level, but this is not what you want to be fielding if you're a major league club. The Yankees have 13 players right now who are injured, and they're significant players. I mean, who knows when Severino's coming back in their starting rotation. Obviously, their bashers are down, and not just Judge, but Stanton's been hurt. You know, Miguel Andujar was hurt, and he was in the running for, you know, for a Rookie of the Year with Gleyber Torres last year. I mean, they've got some pretty big guys who were hurt. But in the case of Aaron Judge, since obviously that's the focus here on, you know, on Sportsline, the Bulldog Hour, I am concerned about Aaron Judge because he swings with so much, you know, torque and so much power that a strained oblique is a problem. And, you know, Judge has had a history of being injured. He got hit, you know, he got hit on the wrist last year that caused him to miss about 40-something games in his rookie season. He missed, you know, he missed a couple of weeks, too, I believe. I forget what the injury is off the top of my head. But, you know, again, we said when he broke into the bigs, you know, officially, you know, for the full duration in 2017, because he had that, obviously, late-season call-up in 16. But in 2017, we were saying that what he was doing, especially early on in the season when he was leading in the Triple Crown categories, we were saying that what he was doing was unprecedented because somebody who's, you know, 6'7", 285, playing right field every day, you don't see that in Major League Baseball. And so Judge has kind of rewritten the stereotypes as to what, you know, power hitting, you know, guys who bat second in your lineup can look like out in the field. But he has not been able to stay completely healthy. When he is healthy, he's still striking out a ridiculous amount. You know, he is obviously hitting for power, and that helps. But yeah, I mean, injuries are a concern when you're somebody who's outside the normal parameters of what a Major League Baseball player should look like. So hopefully it is just a couple of weeks, but if both the general manager, you know, and the manager and the trainers are saying that it could be longer than that, you have to kind of hold your breath and say, okay, well, you know, how long is this latest setback going to be? Because, you know, the Yankees are fortunate right now, as we all know, they're still paying Judge next to nothing. He's making barely above league minimum, like $600,000 or something like that, which is, of course, not nothing to you and me or anyone else out there listening. But for a professional athlete, somebody who's, you know, already accomplished what he's accomplished, Rookie of the Year, runner-up for MVP a couple of years ago, you know, 50 home runs his rookie season. I mean, he is the face of the Yankees. They're getting him at a huge bargain. So it's not really costing them a lot right now as it would be for, you know, Stanton or Jacoby Ellsbury, who seems to be hurt, you know, just waking up in the morning. But, yes, I am concerned about Judge. I'm very concerned.
Well, good news for Yankee fans. I'm going to run away from the Yankees like my hair is on fire here since they've driven me crazy from the time I was a kid. As you know, I'm still mad about 1962, and we'll leave that alone. But just the year in general and also the World Series. But the Red Sox lost again today, the first of two from the rainout yesterday. So if they keep losing, the Yankees will be fine. That's all I can tell you about that. Hey, look, our Mount Rushmore. I brought this up with Paul yesterday. Our Mount Rushmore taking a big hit here. You've got Judge hurt. You've got Paul George playing through injury right now. You've got Nick still trying to come back. And Derek with uncertain footing from a front office that nobody knows much about right now in regard to their plans. So let's segue to football and the draft coming up. I know you talked to Marcus. I jokingly told you to talk to Marcus. I knew you'd do it anyway. I'll talk to Marcus in a week down at NFL Network. But do you think right now, just mentioning the Seattle KC deal, which is a substantial one, do you think the Raiders, I'm convinced that we're going to see Kyler Murray go one because Kingsbury loves him, and I don't see any way they're not going to go ahead and pull the trigger on that unless, as I said yesterday, they get an unbelievable offer. I think they're going to go Murray one. They'll worry about what to do with Rosen after that. But the thought that the Raiders have a big surprise coming early in the draft, do you think that Derek is going to be there when the Raiders move to Vegas? Let's say that's next year, 2020. Is Derek going to be the quarterback of the then Las Vegas Raiders, or is he going to be somewhere else?
To be honest, Tony, I think it depends what he does this season. You know, they're obviously committed to him for this season because he got the bonus, and it would be a huge cap hit, plus he's making a lot of money.
Cap disaster.
But a lot of that guaranteed money goes away as they move to Las Vegas. And so Todd McShay, I actually put this I put this quote on the air last night from Todd McShay at 11:20 when I was anchoring on both 47 and 24 about him saying that John Gruden loves Kyler Murray, but he's not in love with Derek Carr. And Todd McShay, who is, you know, certainly a world-renowned draft expert for ESPN, thinks that the marriage between Carr and Gruden could come to an end pretty soon. I think that John Gruden does like Derek Carr, but there are some things about Derek that probably don't mesh, you know, with a guy like John Gruden. Derek is more conservative, as we know. We still don't know everything that happened with the national anthem behind the scenes, but, you know, we heard that his linemen were kind of upset because, you know, Derek doesn't want to stray from his faith, and that's fine. I mean, to each his own. But when you're in a locker room with guys that are going to battle with you and trying to protect you, you need to do everything that you can to assure that you're going in, you know, fully funded and with all of your, you know, with all of your, you know, your guys by your side. I mean, that's the reason why you see all these stories. We saw it the other day about Russell Wilson, you know, purchasing $12,000 in Amazon stock for his offensive line. You know, the guy just made, you know, a gazillion dollars, and he wants to take care of the guys who protect him all the time. And that's, you know, that's not only good karma, that's good business sense. And so I'm not saying that the players on the team don't look to Derek as a leader. I'm saying that when you have new leadership above you, and obviously a new coach and a new general manager, they're not necessarily tied at the hip with the quarterback that they didn't draft. And so I think if Derek goes out and has a good season this year, he'll force their hand to kind of keep him around. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they go out and get a Kyler Murray, because they do have all that firepower in the draft with three first-round picks.
Right.
The Cardinals could very easily trade, you know, Josh Rosen and draft Murray, or they could decide, you know what, we're going to see what teams offer us, and maybe they can get something from the Raiders. So I would not be surprised if the Raiders decide to draft another quarterback, but in terms of Derek Carr's future, you know, in Oakland/Las Vegas, I mean, I don't think it's any secret, Tony, that he still has to prove himself to John Gruden, just because those two, while they are saying everything publicly, all the private things that we hear that just kind of leak out say that it's not exactly the best of marriages. There's a lot of rockiness and shakiness behind the scenes. So my guess is Derek will be the quarterback for 2019 no matter what. But if he wants to be the quarterback in 2020, he's going to have to go out and probably have a season like he did in 2016 before he got hurt, obviously, where the Raiders made the playoffs and he was, third in the MVP voting that year. So that's kind of what I think, is he's playing for his job this season.
Yeah, I think you're very much in the middle of the bullseye, Andrew, because as you referenced, you can't really do anything right now or it would be a cap disaster. The dead money would be enormous. Next year it won't be quite as bad. You also have the new venue. Potentially it should be ready to go, although that might not be the case. The deal in Oakland is they'll play there until things are ready. So if it's on time and it's 2020, then you're going to really reboot and start all over again in a new city, new state for the first time, too. So we'll see about that. Look, as far as what Gruden does, like I said, he has the keys to the car in every way you possibly can. He has the full support of ownership. And you talk about the locker room. That was an issue. It came up without question in D.C., as you know, a couple seasons ago. I don't know that it has been smoothed over. But the other thing is, Derek is a gunslinger. We've mentioned that he not only paid homage to his brother, but his number was reflective of his desire to be another Brett Favre, which, as you know, is not what Gruden really is looking for. He doesn't like a guy who takes a lot of chances. So there are some things that play against Derek despite his talent. Hopefully it works out. All right, I also want to ask you, closer to home here, about Kendall Milton, and we have had this conversation many times about whether someone has been on the radar since, my goodness, sixth grade or whatever it is, Clovis Unified, whether he considered Fresno State seriously. He has just released his top seven, at least his dad did, through Facebook, and Fresno State is not on the list. Doesn't surprise me at all, Andrew, because I thought the only way Kendall would end up here would be as a bounce back. Are you surprised at all that Fresno State would not be in that top seven, at least according to Kendall's dad?
No, I'm not surprised. I was actually pleasantly surprised to see Fresno State in his initial list, but it's clear now that he did that because he wanted to appease, you know, his hometown. And I think he does have a lot of respect for Fresno State. I mean, I've interviewed him before. I've talked to his, you know, dad, and, you know, right, obviously his brother, you know, was a Fresno State Bulldog. And so I think he has respect for the program. Obviously he's got respect for Jeff Tedford. But when you get recruited by all of these programs and they're all coming after you with different promises of, you know, playing time and getting you to the next level and, you know, having the, you know, the top level coaching that unfortunately is as great as Jeff Tedford has been for the Bulldogs, you know, he's not in the Nick Saban category. He's not in the, you know, in the playing in a 100, you know, 1,000 seat, you know, stadium category. And so if Kendall Milton feels like he has a better chance to, you know, to win national championships and to get to the next level by going somewhere else, you can't fault the person for, you know, for wanting to better himself. Now, could he have success at Fresno State and at the next level? Of course he can. I mean, we've seen examples. Derek Carr, Devontae Adams, the most recent. But we've also seen examples of guys who have, you know, start here in the Valley at the high school level and gone elsewhere and taken their chances. And Adrian Martinez is somebody right now that we're certainly keeping a close eye on. He started as a, you know, as a freshman last year for Nebraska, and he's already in the Heisman Trophy conversation, even though the Huskers right, did not have that great of a season last year. So I think Kendall Milton is a special talent, and we certainly wish him well wherever he goes. But I think Fresno State will be just fine without him. And I think probably privately the conversations that he and his good buddy Jalen Cropper have had, I'm sure Cropper tried to say, hey, come here, we can have, put something special together. And Kendall Milton was probably saying, hey, man, there's nothing wrong with Fresno State. You know, certainly wish you, you know, wish you the best of luck. But, you know, it's tough to turn down a USC or an Alabama or whatever program he, you know, he ends up choosing. So, no, I'm not surprised that Fresno State did not make his latest cut.
Well, look, you're right on all counts. And Jeff Tedford, I think, is every bit the coach that Nick Saban is, but you are correct that Jeff is dealing with a different set of circumstances in regard to recruiting, not only the conference, but with it is national television. The potential to play for a national title is not there. So the hand that Jeff is being dealt is not an equitable one. That's reality. He's not the only one that deals with it. The entirety of the conference does. It's just that when you have somebody in your own backyard, you'd like to keep them if possible. With quarterbacks, we know that Jeff has an extra bit of sway because that is without question the position he is most known for coaching-wise. But when you bring up Adrian Martinez, that is the prime example of the potential for a bounce back. I don't think it's going to happen with Adrian, but that's the kind of thing I think with Milton or anybody else from this area who wants to sample, you know, our great friend from yesteryear, the late and wonderful John Wallace, used to always talk about this. as you know, because you worked with John. John grew up in San Francisco, but really was a de facto Fresno guy because he was here from the 60s right up until his very untimely death. He had mentioned that the old saying applies. It's hard to keep them down on the farm once they've seen Perry. And what that means is once somebody samples something outside the area that appears to be more glamorous, you are going to have a problem initially getting them to stay. Now, if they go and sample that fair and find out that it's not for them for a variety of reasons in sport, it can be playing time, it can be the fact you no longer have your family around. All those things, Andrew, can lead you back home. But in order for you to make that comparison, you have to go out and experience it first. So I would say with Kendall Milton, my assumption has always been he was going to go to the quote-unquote big time. SC, as we know, was his dream school, and I don't know if that's been affected by the fact that SC is down and the Pac-12 is down. But any time Saban comes knocking, you have to pay attention because you're right. The venue, the conference, the fact you're on national TV every week in prime time, Andrew, it is a very seductive kind of situation, and I mean that in all positive sense. I don't mean that in a prurient way. It is a situation that if you feel you need to sample that opportunity, then I think you ought to go and do it. And then if it doesn't work out, there's always a place for you at home. Is that the most leveled way to look at this?
I think so. You know, I mean, certainly he's going into it thinking that he's going to play for a storied program. And even if USC has a couple of down years, there's no reason why he couldn't be a standout player on those USC teams. And, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, nobody's going to remember what the USC records were. I mean, heck, I don't remember what USC's record was when Fresno State, you know, played the Trojans both in 2013 and 2014. That was just a few years ago. People still look at it as it's USC. You know, it's the school that produced, you know, Reggie Bush. And, you know, you obviously have to, you know, say that with a grain of salt because you don't want to talk about the Heisman Trophy he had to give back. But people remember what he did against Fresno State in that 2005 game. You look at, you know, and we're just talking recent history here, you know, with guys like Matt Leinart and, you know, Sam Darnold, who were high draft picks, and obviously what, you know, what Lane Kiffin, what Monty Kiffin, what, you know, Pete Carroll, you know, all those guys were able to do. And this is just recently, certainly. I mean, you could go back, you know, years and decades. It's a storied program. Fresno State has history, but with respect to the Bulldogs, not history like USC. What's really interesting, though, is you talk about, you know, trying to say no when some of these, you know, programs come at you. We're seeing this right now with supposedly the pride of the 2020 class for the Bulldogs, Jaden Casey, the quarterback in Calabasas.
Yeah.
He got an offer from, you know, from Alabama, and from what I've read, and I believe Jackson wrote about this, I think Nick Saban called him personally. Well, that's really tough to say no to Nick Saban when, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. Obviously, Alabama has had tremendous success, has gotten players to the next level, and has won national championships at the collegiate level. At the same time, if you're a quarterback, you may not necessarily have that success translate to the next level. How many great Alabama quarterbacks have had success in the NFL, whereas Jeff Tedford has proven to develop quarterbacks that have had success? He's worked with David and Derek Carr, Aaron Rodgers, Kyle Bowler. You know, he found Jared Goff. I mean, his track record is proven when it comes to quarterbacks. And so if a guy like Jaden Casey can turn down Alabama to come to Fresno State, that might open the floodgates. I mean, certainly winning will help, too. And we've talked about this numerous times. And going back to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago about the attendance, well, I could tell you if Fresno State is going to win 10 to 12 games a year for, you know, for the next 5, 10, 20 years or whatever it is, you'll be able to keep all of the good guys, you know, in town at, you know, the program in town, and you'll be able to go out and potentially, you know, flip commits who want to go to another program but say, you know what, I can have that same success, I can play right away, and I can do it at a program that I want to be part of something. That's one of the first things I asked Ronnie Rivers about when he came to Fresno State, because he came, he was one of Jeff Tedford's first recruits, and he came knowing that the program was coming off a one-win season. And he said, look, you know, I appreciate the fact that my dad played here. I'm buying into it, and I want to be part of the turnaround, part of the resurgence. Well, Ronnie Rivers is, you know, in my opinion, certainly the best player on that team. You know, you could argue that other guys are, you know, equally as valuable, but I think Ronnie Rivers is the most valuable player on that team, and Fresno State would not be where it is today if he hadn't produced the way that he produced the last couple of seasons. He was obviously MVP of the Las Vegas Bowl. He scored the game-winning touchdown in the Mountain West Championship game last year, and those are just two recent, you know, memories that that come to mind. So, but his philosophy is the same as a guy like Jalen Cropper, who, you know, could have gone to any of you know, a number of programs. He's a 4- or 5-star guy, depending on which, you know, which ranking service you look at, and he chose to stay home and play for the Bulldogs. He could have gone somewhere else. These guys want to be here. They want to play for Coach Tedford, and they want to be part of something special. So you're not going to be able to keep everybody. Again, just looking at recent memory, Tyler Bray, you know, went to Tennessee. T.J. McDonald, you know, went to USC. There have been guys, you know, who have gone to, you know, Jeff Toole went to Washington State. I mean, you're not going to keep every single talented player from the Valley in the Valley. And so a guy like Kendall Milton, even if Fresno State, you know, had gone undefeated last season, he may decide to go elsewhere. But as long as you are, you know, actively recruiting these guys, telling them that you want them here, ultimately the decision is left up to, you know, a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid. So they're going to do what they feel like is best in the moment for themselves, their family, their friends, their national exposure, whatever it is. Kendall Milton would be a great player at Fresno State, but I think the Bulldogs will be just fine if they don't end up getting him. And they just got a commitment from McKinley Lee, you know, another running back from the Valley. He's from Edison. Now, he may not be as talented as Kendall Milton, but there's no reason why he couldn't be successful in the Bulldogs system. So Jeff Tedford will keep finding ways to churn out the guys and, you know, get the guys who want to be Bulldogs at Fresno State.
Points are well taken. I will tell you it is jarring to see the little regard that the Pac-12 is being held in now, and it has to do with what you're talking about, Andrew. You know, you try to put yourself in place of someone who is 16, 17 years old. You might be able to do it. It's impossible for me unless we want the time machine to go back to, like, 1972, which I don't think we're going to do when there was a different world. In
well, respect. That's still 20 years ago for me, Tony.
Yeah, well, again, I'm just saying that, you know, to me, in 1972, I was 15 years old, and at that point, the Dolphins were undefeated 17-0, and, you know, the line was in college football that USC wasn't the best team in the country. The Miami Dolphins were, meaning USC was a close second, okay, to the NFL champions. That is something that for people growing up now, they are looking at the Pac-12. If they started to watch football the time they were 10, 12 years old, all they see is a Pac-12 that has fallen well behind, and Oregon is probably the glamour team at the moment. So it is a different world. I want to ask you one other thing quickly here, because I will talk to Marcus. I talk to Marcus off-air all the time, particularly to harass him about the fact he gets no sleep because he has naturally fatherhood on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis, and brings a smile to my face every time I think about it. But your point of view, since Marcus has made it known, and I'll talk to him probably on Friday, about both Jeff Allison and Mike Bell. Andrew, do you think – I think Bell's going to be drafted. Do you think that Allison is going to be drafted that second or third day?
You know, I've asked Marcus that twice, and he's got great insight and great answers. Back in December, when both those guys officially announced that they would not be coming back to Fresno State, I had Marcus on, and we did a phone interview just like we did for this past Bulldog Insider. They're both available online if people want to go check it out, yourcentralvalley.com. In December, I asked him if they made the right decision, and he said, you know, it's to be determined, obviously. You know, he was looking at their body of work, and he was looking at what they felt like they could get out of, you know, one more year of Fresno State versus going pro, and he said to be determined. Well, now we've been through the combine. Now we've been through pro day. Now we're just, you know, I mean, the draft is 2 days away. When I talked to him, it was, you know, obviously a few more days away, but still within a week. And he told me that the same thing that I kind of suspected, that neither of these guys, even if they get drafted, are going on the first couple of days. And so then the question becomes, and I asked Marcus this, I said, well, did they make a mistake? Because if they came out early from Fresno State, they did so with the assumption that they would be high-round draft picks. If you're not going in the first round or the second round, like a Derek Carr, Davante Adams, Ryan Matthews type, does it make sense for you to come out early from a mid-major? Because, I mean, we know the argument for it. You know, you feel like it's, you know, you're still going to find a home someplace and you can have the chance to provide for your family and your close friends. I mean, I get all that. But if it doesn't work out, and we know the odds on making it to the next level, if you're not a high-round draft pick, you're not a lock to make a team, and you're not a lock to have a lengthy career. So then what happens? Because then you don't even have a college degree to fall back on. To answer your direct question, though, from what I've heard and what I've read, it might be a challenge for Jeff Allison to get drafted, which is crazy when you think about it, because he was the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year. You know, Fresno State relied on him heavily, and he delivered for two seasons for the Bulldogs. But he's somebody that had a bad combine. His pro day wasn't that great. And size-wise, he may not be a fit for a specific team, at least draft-wise. I mean, everyone's going to sign a free agent deal. Not that that can't work out, certainly. I mean, Cameron Worrell is a perfect example, somebody who didn't get drafted, happens to be from a small town, obviously, in Chowchilla, and he turned it into 6 years, you know, in the NFL. He played for two teams, the Bears and the Dolphins, and, you know, made a life, a nice little life and career for himself. So, but I think that I agree with Marcus. I think Keyshawn Johnson is definitely getting drafted. He'll be a day three guy, probably early on day three, you know, somewhere in like the fourth, maybe mid to late fourth, early fifth round. I can see Mike Bell getting drafted maybe in like the somewhere between late fifth and early seventh. But I wouldn't be surprised that Jeff Allison doesn't get drafted. So my question to Marcus was, did they make a mistake? And he said, again, not necessarily, because they could find a free agent role someplace with a team that, you know, utilizes their skill set in the right way, maybe on special teams, maybe a hybrid type. I mean, we saw it with Clifton Smith, and he's another great example. He didn't have a lengthy NFL career, but he went from undrafted free agent to being on the practice squad to making the Pro Bowl his rookie season after he was activated halfway through, because he had his opportunity and he delivered. So that's really all you need, is to get your foot in the door. But it's going to be a lot harder if you don't get drafted. So I do think it's going to be a challenge for Allison to get drafted. The one nice thing, though, is since everyone seems to be in agreement that Keyshawn is going to get drafted for sure, at least this drought will end for the Bulldogs. You know, 2015 was the last year they had a player drafted. They had gone 15 straight years having at least one player drafted, and none since 15. That will obviously change, assuming, of course, that at least one player gets drafted, but it sounds like that will be the case.
Yeah, I would agree. KJ's definitely going to get drafted. We'll see after that. Andrew, appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your time away from town. I will talk to you next week, my friend. Take care.
Sounds good, Tony. Take care.
All right, guys. Andrew Martin, we'll take a break, come back, wrap it up, send you off to CG for a little while. Giants coming up pregame at 3:25. Sharks will follow that. Softball over on 790 tonight in the Mountain West Network. Take a break on 5000 Watt 940 ESPN.